This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate, International General Certificate of Secondary Education, November 1993 examination, in English as a second language, paper 4, listening comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, candidate number, and center number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you are doing the test. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you are all ready. Here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are six questions in this part of the exam. You will hear each question twice. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each question twice. Question 1. You are waiting to catch a flight to Los Angeles. What has happened?
Flight 175 to Los Angeles has been cancelled. Passengers awaiting this flight should proceed to check-in desk 16, where they will be booked onto an alternative flight. Flight 175 to Los Angeles has been cancelled. Passengers awaiting this flight should proceed to check-in desk 16, where they will be booked onto an alternative flight.
Question 2. A friend has phoned to apologize for missing your birthday party. Where did she go instead?
Oh, I'm really sorry. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. It was my little brother. He came off his skateboard and knocked himself out. He's okay now, of course, but I just couldn't let my mother take him to the hospital on her own. She was beside herself. Oh, I'm really sorry. I wouldn't have missed it for anything. It was my little brother. He came off his skateboard and knocked himself out. He's okay now, of course, but I just couldn't let my mother take him to the hospital on her own. She was beside herself.
Question 3. You meet a neighbor. Who has written to her? And what has her family been invited to do?
Guess what? We're all over the moon. You know we've got cousins in New Zealand. Well, we got a letter this morning and they've bought a yacht. And they've invited us to go cruising with them. Aren't you jealous? Guess what? We're all over the moon. You know we've got cousins in New Zealand. Well, we got a letter this morning and they've bought a yacht. And they've invited us to go cruising with them. Aren't you jealous?
Question 4. You are at the tennis club waiting for your teacher. What has happened to her?
I'm afraid you'll have to put up with me this afternoon. There's a nasty flu bug doing the rounds, and I'm the only one still fit enough to teach. I'm afraid you'll have to put up with me this afternoon. There's a nasty flu bug doing the rounds, and I'm the only one still fit enough to teach.
Question 5. You are going into town to do some shopping. What does your friend ask you to buy?
If you're going anywhere that sells stationery, can you get me a pad of graph paper? I've got to do some proper graphs to go with my project. If you're going anywhere that sells stationery, can you get me a pad of graph paper? I've got to do some proper graphs to go with my project.
Question 6. You're helping to organize a school show. What two things are you asked to find out about?
After morning classes, could you go along to the office and check how many parents have replied so far, and how many have said they'll be coming? After morning classes, could you go along to the office and check how many parents have replied so far, and how many have said they'll be coming?
That is the last question in part one. In a moment, you will hear part two. Now look at part two, exercise one. Part 2. Exercise 1. Question 7. Listen to Terry and Mina talking about the arrangements for their exam week and complete the entries in Mina's diary. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hello, Terry?
Hi, yes. How are you, Mina?
Oh, much better, thanks. Have you got the details of our exam timetable?
Yeah, they've really rearranged the whole week. Have you got a pen?
Yes, and my diary.
Okay. Well, Monday, that's the 30th, is all set aside for revision, okay?
Yes, I knew that.
Fine. Well, in the afternoon, we have to collect our numbers from the office.
Any time?
Yeah.
Collect exam number. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they've made Thursday a revision day too.
Oh, good.
The first exam's on Tuesday at 9:30. It's maths, I'm afraid.
Ugh. 9:30?
Yes. And environmental studies is at 2:30.
Oh, I can't bear it. Yeah. What about Wednesday?
Well, the bad news is statistics in the morning at 9.
Oh, I'll die.
But the good news is they're taking us swimming in the afternoon. Mr. Franz said we'd need a break.
Oh, how perceptive of him. Yeah.
So we'll be able to really get down to our economics books on Thursday.
Horrible man. So I guess we have the exam on Friday?
Yes. In the morning, same time as the maths, with, wait for it, environmental studies in the afternoon.
But you said...
We're having two papers, 1 hour each, instead of one long one. 2:30, that is.
Oh, I see. Well, it could be worse, I suppose.
I don't know how. Anyway... Saturday, we have to clear our lockers and desks and things, return library books, you know.
Tidy up, etc., I'll call that. And then we're free?
Not quite.
Oh?
We've got to decorate the school hall on Saturday.
Oh.
Yeah, for prize giving on Sunday afternoon.
I'd forgotten. Oh, well. What time is prize giving?
4:30.
Okay. Well, thanks for all that. I'll see you on Monday.
No bother. See you.
Bye.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hello, Terry?
Hi, yes. How are you, Mina?
Oh, much better, thanks. Have you got the details of our exam timetable?
Yeah, they've really rearranged the whole week. Have you got a pen?
Yes, and my diary.
Okay. Well, Monday, that's the 30th, is all set aside for revision, okay?
Yes, I knew that.
Fine. Well, in the afternoon, we have to collect our numbers from the office.
Any time?
Yeah.
Collect exam number. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they've made Thursday a revision day too.
Oh, good.
The first exam's on Tuesday at 9:30. It's maths, I'm afraid.
Oh. 9:30?
Yes. And environmental studies is at 2:30.
Oh, I can't bear it. Yeah. What about Wednesday?
Well, the bad news is statistics in the morning at 9.
Oh, I'll die.
But the good news is they're taking us swimming in the afternoon. Mr. Frond said we'd need a break.
Oh, how perceptive of him. Yeah.
So we'll be able to really get down to our economics books on Thursday.
Horrible man. So I guess we have the exam on Friday?
Yes. In the morning, same time as the maths, with, wait for it, environmental studies in the afternoon.
But you said...
We're having two papers, 1 hour each, instead of one long one. Half past two, that is.
Oh, I see. Well, it could be worse, I suppose.
I don't know how. Anyway, Saturday, we have to clear our lockers and desks and things, return library books, you know.
Tidy up, etc., I'll call that. And then we're free?
Not quite.
Oh?
We've got to decorate the school hall on Saturday.
Oh.
Yeah, for prize giving on Sunday afternoon.
I'd forgotten. Oh, well. What time is prize giving?
4:30.
Okay. Well, thanks for all that. I'll see you on Monday.
No bother. See you.
Bye.
That is the end of exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for exercise 2. Exercise 2. Questions 8 to 11. Listen to this talk about a school gardening club and complete the notes. You will hear the talk twice.
Well, hello all of you. I'm really pleased to see so many of you interested in having a plot to work on. First of all, I'd like to tell you a bit about how we organize things. Then we can discuss any particular ideas you may have, okay? So, the allocation is a plot 3 meters square for each student. Theoretically. Actually, what happens is that some people want to do more ambitious things, so they team up and share 2 or even 3 plots so that they can grow a few really big things, or try their hand at a bit of construction work. I'll come back to that later. We have very few rules. Gardeners tend to be sensible people, we find. But the few rules we do have are important, and they all have to do with our main idea. To make anything of a garden, you must be committed to it. So, 2 things you must do. You must be responsible for watering and weeding your plot regularly. Because if you don't do these things, your seeds won't germinate, and there'll be weeds which can spread to neighbouring plots. And secondly, you must return tools to the store immediately you've finished with them. If you don't, you'll be so unpopular with the other club members, you'll probably wish you'd never joined. So, you've been warned. As far as seeds are concerned, we have quite a good stock of the most commonly grown vegetables and a rather more limited selection of flowers. If there's something special you'd like to try, have a talk with me about it, and I'll see if we can get hold of some, provided it's got a chance of succeeding. As you know, you're absolutely free to plan your own plots as you like. I would just ask you, if you plan anything structural, Some people had a go at making a pond 2 years ago, for example. Please talk to me before you begin, so that we can give you a plot where your experiments won't interfere with your neighbours. Now, any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Well, hello all of you. I'm really pleased to see so many of you interested in having a plot to work on. First of all, I'd like to tell you a bit about how we organize things. Then we can discuss any particular ideas you may have, okay? So, the allocation is a plot 3 meters square for each student, theoretically. Actually, what happens is that some people want to do more ambitious things, so they team up and share 2 or even 3 plots so that they can grow a few really big things, or try their hand at a bit of construction work. I'll come back to that later. We have very few rules. Gardeners tend to be sensible people, we find. But the few rules we do have are important, and they all have to do with our main idea. To make anything of a garden, you must be committed to it. So, 2 things you must do. You must be responsible for watering and weeding your plot regularly. Because if you don't do these things, your seeds won't germinate, and there'll be weeds which can spread to neighbouring plots. And secondly, you must return tools to the store immediately you've finished with them. If you don't, you'll be so unpopular with the other club members, you'll probably wish you'd never joined. So, you've been warned. As far as seeds are concerned, we have quite a good stock of the most commonly grown vegetables, and a rather more limited selection of flowers. If there's something special you'd like to try, have a talk with me about it, and I'll see if we can get hold of some. Provided it's got a chance of succeeding. As you know, you're absolutely free to plan your own plots as you like. I would just ask you, if you plan anything structural, some people had a go at making a pond 2 years ago, for example, please talk to me before you begin, so that we can give you a plot where your experiments won't interfere with your neighbours. Now, any questions?
That is the end of part 2. In a moment, you will hear part 3. Now look at the questions for part 3, exercise 1. Part 3. Exercise 1. Questions 12 to 16. Listen to the 2 teenagers discussing television programs and answer the questions in the spaces provided. You will hear the discussion twice.
Let's watch Grange Hill.
Oh, no, not that series about the comprehensive school.
Don't you watch it, then?
You must be joking. I mean, we spend all day at school as it is. Who wants to come home and look at someone else's school on the box? Now, to be perfectly honest, I've got better things to do with my time.
Really? Such as?
Oh, I don't know. This and that.
Typical. You get all superior about a programme you don't even watch and can't even say what you do instead.
Ah, it depends how I feel. As long as it's nothing to do with school.
But that's not the point. It raises some really important questions, you know, about relationships, morality, all that sort of stuff.
You mean about the good guy who discovers his mate smoking in school or out playing football when he's meant to be sick and feels he ought to speak to him about it but can't think what to say?
Aye?
It's all so trivial. No thanks.
Okay, okay. It's not all good guy, bad guy stuff anyway. You make it sound like a cartoon or something.
Well, it's not much better in my view. If you think about what's offered on television, you've got cartoons for little kids. Then there are teenage dramas and nature documentaries for the likes of you and me. Mm. And, of course, sex, violence and adult drama for our parents. And for us, if we finished our homework. Now, it's okay for us to watch programmes like that. We can understand them. But what about little kids? Do they really understand what they're all about? I mean, what kind of view of our so-called civilised society do they get?
Oh, come on. Don't exaggerate the bad points. You sound just like my gran. What kind of picture of the world are your brothers going to get from watching television all the time? Wounded soldiers, hooligans rioting in the streets, Donald Duck cartoons, nature programmes, a pop music quiz and a spy film. They've seen all that tonight alone. Your parents should send them to bed earlier. In my day, we...
Well, she's probably right. Did you know that in a survey on children's attitudes to television, they found that one little girl thought a kidnap scene was just a man taking a girl to his house and didn't realise there was any danger in it?
Perhaps she wasn't watching it closely.
Probably not. Anyway, the same survey said that children of 6 and 7 are attracted by the superficial things. You know, rich people, nice clothes, physical attraction, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that they only watch it for fun. They hardly use their minds at all to work out what's going on. It also said that a lot of kids find it hard to remember what happened in a programme and to judge the behaviour of the characters.
So?
Well, it's true, isn't it? I mean, I can't remember a programme from one day to the next, even if I've really enjoyed it. But I do remember the main things in a book.
Oh, books are different. Anyway, you would say that. You're a real bookworm.
No, honestly, it's true. They did an experiment with two groups of children. One group was given a book and the other watched a film on the same subject. And they found that the readers understood and remembered much more than the viewers.
Oh, well, I think television beats books every time. And anyway, there are lots of really good, interesting programmes to watch.
Maybe. I'm not arguing about that. I don't watch enough for it to matter one way or another. But I would worry if I had younger brothers and sisters like you have.
Well, parents should control what their children watch. Mine do.
Then you're lucky. A lot of parents don't. Anyway, if you're going to watch today's episode, you'd better switch on the TV. I'll even keep you company, if you like.
And criticise all the way through. No thanks.
Now you will hear the discussion again.
Let's watch Grange Hill.
Oh, no, not that series about the comprehensive school.
Don't you watch it, then?
You must be joking. I mean, we spend all day at school as it is. Who wants to come home and look at someone else's school on the box? Now, to be perfectly honest, I've got better things to do with my time.
Really? Such as?
Oh, I don't know. This and that.
Typical. You get all superior about a programme you don't even watch and can't even say what you do instead.
It depends how I feel. As long as it's nothing to do with school.
But that's not the point. It raises some really important questions, you know, about relationships, morality, all that sort of stuff.
You mean about the good guy who discovers his mate smoking in school or out playing football when he's meant to be sick and feels he ought to speak to him about it but can't think what to say?
Aye?
It's all so trivial.
No, thanks.
Okay, okay. It's not all good guy, bad guy stuff anyway. You make it sound like a cartoon or something.
Well, it's not much better in my view. If you think about what's offered on television, you've got cartoons for little kids. Then there are teenage dramas and nature documentaries for the likes of you and me. Mm. And, of course, sex, violence and adult drama for our parents. And for us, if we finished our homework. Now, it's okay for us to watch programmes like that. We can understand them. But what about little kids? Do they really understand what they're all about? I mean, what kind of view of our so-called civilised society do they get?
Oh, come on. Don't exaggerate the bad points. You sound just like my gran. What kind of picture of the world are your brothers going to get from watching television all the time? Wounded soldiers, hooligans rioting in the streets, Donald Duck cartoons, nature programmes, a pop music quiz and a spy film. They've seen all that tonight alone. Your parents should send them to bed earlier. In my day, we...
Well, she's probably right. Did you know that in a survey on children's attitudes to television, they found that one little girl thought a kidnap scene was just a man taking a girl to his house and didn't realise there was any danger in it?
Perhaps she wasn't watching it closely.
Probably not. Anyway, the same survey said that children of 6 and 7 are attracted by the superficial things. You know, rich people, nice clothes, physical attraction, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that they only watch it for fun. They hardly use their minds at all to work out what's going on. It also said that a lot of kids find it hard to remember what happened in a programme and to judge the behaviour of the characters.
So?
Well, it's true, isn't it? I mean, I can't remember a programme from one day to the next, even if I've really enjoyed it. But I do remember the main things in a book.
Oh, books are different. Anyway, you would say that. You're a real bookworm.
No, honestly, it's true. They did an experiment with two groups of children. One group was given a book and the other watched a film on the same subject. And they found that the readers understood and remembered much more than the viewers.
Oh, well, I think television beats books every time. And anyway, there are lots of really good, interesting programmes to watch.
Maybe. I'm not arguing about that. I don't watch enough for it to matter one way or another. But I would worry if I had younger brothers and sisters like you have.
Well, parents should control what their children watch. Mine do.
Then you're lucky. A lot of parents don't. Anyway, if you're going to watch today's episode, you'd better switch on the TV. I'll even keep you company, if you like.
And criticise all the way through. No thanks.
That is the end of exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for exercise 2. Exercise 2. Questions 17 to 20. Listen to this museum keeper describing a recent geological discovery to a radio interviewer and answer the questions in the spaces provided. You will hear the interview twice.
And now we come to our next guest, Dr. Stephen Bowen, assistant keeper in one of our regional museums. He's in the studio to tell us something about the amazing discovery on a beach of 200 dinosaur footprints. Believed, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Bowen, to be around 210 million years old.
210 million years old. Yes, you're quite right.
It's so many footprints. It appears of this particular type have never been found in this country before.
They certainly represent one of the most important dinosaur finds ever in this country. In fact, there are very few traces of such dinosaurs at all in Britain. Most evidence so far comes from skeletons found in New York State. This find, however, could give us the best evidence yet of the late Triassic period over here, and could greatly increase our knowledge of how the dinosaurs behaved, the environment they lived in, their biology and so on.
What were these dinosaurs like, then?
It's thought that they were meat-eaters and quite agile animals, really, mm-hmm. with thin, light bones. They moved quickly in packs, rather like wolves do, actually, and were about 7 or 8 feet high.
Is that so? Now, how exactly did the existence of these footprints come to light in the first place?
They were found quite by chance, by an archaeologist who happened to be working on a site nearby. Erosion of the rock on the beach brought the footprints to the surface.
But how have the footprints lasted all that time?
Well, we presume the animals were moving around a watering hole covered over with sand and mud, and that this mushy mixture preserved the footprints.
I never. What an amazing find. It's just a pity the public hasn't been told about it earlier. In fact, it's not just a pity. Some people would go so far as to say it's a disgrace.
And I hope you're not one of those people, Mrs. White.
Well, as a matter of fact, I am. As a taxpayer who helps fund conservation projects, excavations and so on, I feel I have a right to be told when something significant turns up. Not weeks or months afterwards, but at the time.
Well, I'm surprised at you. I'd have thought that someone in the public eye, like yourself, would adopt a more responsible attitude. If these finds were to be preserved for future generations to see, their whereabouts had to remain a secret. We were worried about the rocks imprinted with the footprints being damaged or stolen. I mean, fossils often fetch high prices from collectors, and it wouldn't be the first time such a site were plundered.
Of course not, but there are other ways of protecting sites of great interest.
True, but the most foolproof way will always be through secrecy. If people are not aware there's something to see, they won't go out hunting for it. To have disclosed the whereabouts of the finds before work had begun, cutting up the slabs of rock which hold the footprints, would have amounted to suicide in archaeological terms. There would have been hundreds of people out there with their chisels chipping away at the rock. Surely you can see that.
I'm not convinced. But still, at least we're all party to the finds now, and I'm sure the audience would like to join me in wishing you and the scientists studying the footprints every success.
Now you will hear the interview again.
And now we come to our next guest, Dr. Stephen Bowen, assistant keeper in one of our regional museums. He's in the studio to tell us something about the amazing discovery on a beach of 200 dinosaur footprints,